Okay, we are ready to go.
Great. Okay. Want to call roll?
Yes. Okay. Commissioner Amy Buck?
I'm here.
Commissioner Tanya Dobie? Don't see her yet. Commissioner Faruqi?
Yes, I'm here.
Commissioner Hamill? Don't see him yet. Commissioner Lee?
Here.
Oh, you are. Commissioner Matsuba?
Here.
Commissioner Nimothy?
Here.
Commissioner Carrie Reynolds?
Here.
Commissioner Mike Reynolds?
Here.
Commissioner Steinberg?
Here.
And Commissioner Wang? I know I see you.
Oh, she's here.
Oh. Okay. I do see her. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Today is somewhat unusual for us to have a Human Relations Commission meeting fall on a day that is, I think, central to our mission. Today is Yom HaShoah, or Holocaust Remembrance Day. It is a day of commemoration for the 6 million or more Jews who were murdered by Nazi Germany. And it also commemorates the heroes who resisted, fought, and ultimately defeated the genocidal regime. When American troops entered Germany in 1945, General Eisenhower ordered American photographers to capture as many images of the genocide as possible. His reason? Because he knew there would come a day when people would deny that it had ever happened. Since then, we have become familiar with the phrase, quote, never again. Never again have we looked the other way while genocide is being perpetrated. Never again expresses the hope of a common consciousness, a uniform global rejection of the sort of genocide suffered by European Jewry at the hands of a heartless industrialized killing machine wielded for the passionate purposes of those with hateful hearts. However, and despite what we say, the world since has known genocides, and we have indeed looked the other way. Just since 1945, the end of World War II, the end of the Holocaust, we have seen tens, perhaps even 100 million killed in the name of ethnic cleansing, religious intolerance, great leaps forward, cultural revolutions, Maoism, communisms, and other forms of totalitarianism. Tens of millions of Chinese peasants forcibly starved and murdered by Mao's Communist Party. The killing fields of Cambodia, where 1/4 to 1/3 of that country's entire population was slaughtered by the Khmer Rouge. The slaughter of political dissidents in Cuba, North Korea, Eastern Europe, and former Soviet Union. The ethnic cleansing of Muslims in the Balkans. The ongoing genocide against faithful Muslims in communist China taking place today. The genocide against blacks taking place as we speak in the Sudan. The ongoing war against Christians in Nigeria and other places in West Africa. And who can now forget the idyllic and beautiful countryside of Rwanda, stained with the blood of nearly 900,000 Tutsis murdered by their Hutu neighbors in an explosive frenzy of violence that we have not seen since the Japanese military tortured and tormented the city of Nanking in 1937. What do all these things tell us? First, they tell us that the human capacity for depravity is almost limitless. These crimes against humanity, which are so utterly abhorrent and unusual to us, were actually quite predictable and not terribly unusual to those who lived through them and to those who perpetrated them. Genocide doesn't just happen. It is taught. It is cultivated. People are conditioned over the course of multiple generations that the worst thing can happen. But once you start down the road of dehumanizing the individual, placing him or her in a group whose characteristics are devalued, degraded and generally regarded as less than or even subhuman, untermenschen, as the Nazis would say of the Jews, then hating those people becomes easy. Scapegoating becomes second nature. It became easy for Germans to blame the Jews for the defeat of World War I, for Hutus to blame Tutsis for their economic woes, or for the communists to whip up popular fervor for the mass destruction of entire classes and races of people. Second, these things tell us that, quote, never again, although it is a great anthem, it is aspirational only. And aspirations are terrific, but they are not reality, not until we make them reality. Never again will remain aspirational only until we recognize and internalize our obligation to be eternally vigilant against the worst aspects of our nature. We must be vocal and strident in our rejection of hatred, fear, and resentment or blame against the other. We must guard our own hearts, and we must teach those around us, to borrow a phrase from a man I admire, to know better. Thank you. So, I guess I probably stepped over Chief Hamill for the opening quote or reflection, but that's what was on my mind today.
Well, I don't see him anyway, so.
Beautifully said.
Yes, that was a great share. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we then move on to item number 3.
Okay, item number 3 is the overview of monthly summary of commission activities.
Amy.
You can find this in your packet, but there's always some things I'd like to point out in particular. So one is this report reflects the end of 3/4 of the contract or the year, right? And so as we're nearing the end of the fiscal year, you can see by reading the report that that the commission staff is on par to greatly exceed in many, many areas. And I know I say this every time I do the overview, but I'm going to just say it again, is during a pandemic, that's remarkable to be able to engage people in a meaningful way in a virtual world that minimally existed and prior to the pandemic, and to engage people around matters that are not always easy to discuss, particularly with technological barriers and with that in our community. So the staff is very much deserving of our applause. In particular, I want to call out the relationship building. So the number to meet was 40, and we're currently at 63. So definitely surpassing in that area. Always remarkable and breathtaking to know the support to hate crime victims. And so the goal was 8, and we're at 60, which notes the work of the staff and also the huge need in our community. And also gives me pause in thinking about how much underreporting goes on and how much more work needs to be done in this area. And then in terms of the Chief's Advisory and the Sheriff's Interfaith, the goal was 20, we're at 26. Something else that I found particularly noteworthy in the report is the presentation that was done for the Board of Supervisors on March the 23rd. So there was a presentation of data that took place, and then also Commissioner Wayne leading an effort with a resolution that has become now a catalytic opportunity for our commission. And so definitely want to applaud the work of the commission and particularly applaud my fellow commissioner for the leadership in that area. I think it's brought awareness forward, but awareness is never enough. The call to action is what matters, and data-driven decisions are sometimes what's needed in order to further create change. So I really draw attention to that major accomplishment during this reporting period.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry, I gotta figure out how to press not disturb on my phone.
There we go. Okay, so any questions for Amy before we move on to item 4? Okay, let's move on.
Okay, next on the agenda is open forum. If anybody who has called in wishes to speak, if you could hit *9 on your phone or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app. Let's see. So far we have 2. And I can keep time. Oh, 3. Okay, so far we have 3. There's a total of 5 people that are attendees, so I will just call on the first one that's in line. First is Felicity Figueroa. I'm going to unmute you. Okay, go ahead, Ms. Figueroa.
Okay, thanks so much, Ms. Ross. I just want to say, to begin with, I was very glad to hear your opening remarks about all the incidences of hate in our world, which are very depressing. There are so many. But I would just like to add the inclusion of the Palestinian people to that list. But the comment I wanted to make regarding your agenda was that I was very glad to see that the issue of the deputy's 3% patch is finally being addressed, as I feel there's a huge need for transparency in our public institutions. I would also hope that the issue of the apparent participation of someone from the Sheriff's Department in the January 6th insurrection at the White House is also addressed. However, one thing I'm concerned about is that I heard that the sheriff is now refusing to answer questions after his press briefings. That seems to go against the move towards transparency and openness. How can we have confidence in our public agencies if we can't ask questions when we have doubts? The Southern Poverty Law Center just released their year in hate review for 2020, and it's extremely disquieting to learn about the prevalence of white supremacist beliefs in the military, and often by extension in our law enforcement agencies. The Sheriff's Department, like the Board of Supervisors, are all public servants, paid for with our tax dollars. You all work for us, and we have a right to know what all of you are doing. So just my comments. Thank you so much for all your good works.
Thank you. Okay, next is Tiffany. Okay. You can unmute yourself. All right, go ahead.
Hi, I live in Fullerton, and I just wanted to raise awareness to just some, I'm not even sure if it's categorized as hate incidents. It's quite minor, but I do want to raise awareness. We have neighbors who are just walking, Asian neighbors, walking with their family, and cars would drive by and yell out COVID at my neighbors. And recently, my son, who's 14 months old, my husband took him to the playground, and a little Caucasian girl said to him, said to my husband, "Can you make sure he doesn't give me the COVID?" And I'm not sure, maybe because my son, who's 14 months old, wasn't wearing a mask. But regardless, you know, these type of incidents, I just do feel like it's starting to become like we're a little bit fearful, you know, of being in our home neighborhoods because we don't know what the parents are teaching them. So I wanted to raise these issues.
Thank you, Ms.
Juan. Thank you.
Tiffany, if I could ask a question.
Hold on one second. Let me unmute her. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Hi, Tiffany.
Oh. Tiffany, can I unmute yourself? It's *6. There you are.
Hi. Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you, because I'm in Fullerton, what park was that, what area? Could you tell me if you don't mind?
It's actually Golden Hill Elementary School, so I live right across from the elementary school, and there's a little playground in there that's open after school hours, and that's where we were at. So it's very, very close.
Yeah.
And then I forgot to mention this earlier, but I was speaking to another friend of mine, and she lives in Irvine. I'm not sure which park this was, but at her park, and her daughter is 4 years old, a little boy said, "Oh, I'm going to go somewhere else where there's less Chinese people." So and then she took her kid and she left. And it's, you know, it's not a crime, and we're not really sure what to do, but we feel uncomfortable in these situations, and we don't feel very safe.
So sorry.
Can I add, Jamie?
Yes.
And at the very, I think your comment, your observations here point to the need for people to teach those around them. And you know, you teach people at a young age the wrong lessons, and the results 30, 40 years down the road can be quite catastrophic.
I'd like to add for those who are experiencing, witnessing these acts, to please report. We have a confidential hotline. It is 714-480-6570. That you're able to call. Someone will be able to support and walk you through whatever system you need to go through to report, either if it's a hate crime to law enforcement or if there's resources that you might need that we might be able to connect you to. We also have a reporting form online at ochumanrelations.org/hatecrime/report. So I'm not sure if we're, how we might be able to reiterate that if we, I don't know, are we able to put stuff in the chat?
I'm not actually, because I want to be transparent. Actually, Tiffany, I spoke with Tiffany yesterday. Tiffany's actually my cousin. And we've been going over just an update, really, of what we've been involved in. And so I encourage her to come and speak and share. Because from her experience, and you know, my cousin, this isn't necessarily something that people are really comfortable speaking about. But I think that because she is a new mother, a young mother, that this is hitting home personally for her, and I just really just out of respect, I asked her if she can come and share, and so I'm really glad that she is here, and we will be working on making sure that it is supported.
Yes, thank you so much. I think that's the demonstration of also an additional role for our commissioners, and just as residents of Orange County, making sure that we are creating those pathways and opening up those doors for folks to feel comfortable, to feel safe, to report these acts to us. So thank you, Jennifer, for that, and thank you, Tiffany, for mustering the courage to come share your story with us today.
Yes, thank you, Tiffany.
And Ms. Juan, I would also like to say, and I'd like to thank Ms. Figueroa, who spoke before you. She just sent out a chat note. I'm not sure what they call these in Zoom, chat notes or emails or whatever, but apparently the Irvine Police Department has a way of reporting hate crimes and incidents in the city. It's on their website. And the difference between a hate crime and a hate incident is that you know, what you reported appears to be something that may or may, it's not a hate crime, but it's certainly something that could be reported. And might be a hate incident. So I think that the more that these things are reported, then the more community awareness there will be that there's a problem. Amy, I think you wanted to say something.
I do. So Tiffany, thank you so much for coming today and sharing with us. And one of the things that I heard you say is that you're not sure if this is something. And if your gut tells you it's something, it is something. And so I am so glad that you're here today, and I just want to thank you for taking time to bring this forward, and you know, and just trust your gut always.
I know that at the special meeting 2 weeks ago, Chief Hamill did mention that they're launching their hate crime report website and kiosk. So, you know, I think Irvine does have a program, and I know Chief Hamill's not on the call right now, but hopefully, you know, we can get that information to Norma, who can also send it out as well. So.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yes. We have one more. We have Pat Davis. Okay, go ahead, Ms. Davis.
Putting this on my tab, but let's see if this works any better. Good morning. You certainly have a full agenda. I'm so pleased to speak back online to try to address some of the issues. Hearing Tiffany's story and all the others that are so very vibrant right now, I am herping on my knee for this body, which was officially appointed by the Board of Supervisors, to put your actions into gathering resources. Demanding resources. The numbers that you quoted, Amy, are much the work of the OCH Heart Group, which I've been trying to get more involved with. Their training is fabulous. They're pulling people in to have some hard conversations. And while we talk about being a hate crime or an incident, it goes to climate. And the climate at Orange County sucks. It's dangerous, it's hostile, it's unfriendly. I even have my eighth grade granddaughter now trying to, I mean, I'm proud of her, but she's trying to engage with Fullerton Union High School District to get an ethnic studies program going. And again, I'm totally proud of her. This has been such a weird time with COVID. And as a Latinx child who lives with some of the hostility that was described earlier, I'm very proud of her. But again, groups like this need to take the leadership so that children are not having to face the brunt of this. And I'm sure you're well aware of the white supremacist action being planned for Sunday in Huntington Beach. I've been a legal observer for years, and I've been in that community. It's not a nice place when people show up who bring their ugly selves. So I'm very curious how law enforcement will respond, the sheriffs will respond, and there is a counter demonstration being planned by the faith community. That can always raise issues, but again, I look to this group to take a leadership role so that Amy reads the numbers that are really delivered by the human OCHR, you realize there has to be more done. And again, the special meeting gave me hope, and I'm hoping that I hear more when I listen in at the Board of Supervisors. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Davis. Any other folks?
Last call for, hold on.
You're muted.
Yeah,
Janet.
I saw that. Sorry about that. All right, last call for any public comments. If you can hit star 9 or hit the hand raise icon on the Zoom app.
Okay.
Just a reminder, though, just to the three people that haven't spoke, this is the only opportunity. So if you wish to speak, please do so now. Nope. Okay.
Okay. Next item, please.
Next item is item number 4. It is commissioner authorization requests for events.
Don't see any hands raised, and okay. All right, then let's move on to the next item.
Okay, item number 5 is the update of deputy wearing 3% patch.
Okay, I'm sure that our sheriff needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. You've heard me say many times that I believe that we are blessed in Orange County to have the law enforcement community that we have. The Orange County Sheriff's Department, I believe, is one of the truly elite law enforcement units in the country. It has, like all law enforcement units, has had good days and bad days. I believe that through Sheriff Don Barnes and his predecessor, the late Sandra Hutchins, the Orange County Sheriff's Department has been restored to its unique place among law enforcement units around the country. And we are very grateful to have you here to address us today, Sheriff Barnes. And this is something of an educational situation also as well, because I'm not aware, or I should say I became aware of this 3% patch issue because of the comments of Ms. Figueroa at a prior HRC meeting. I wasn't aware of what this 3% patch meant. I've done a little bit of research myself on it, I understand that the department has guidelines on what can be spoken about regarding existing personnel issues. We understand, you will, whatever you're allowed to say, you will, but if there's an ongoing investigation, it's often not proper to speak about what's going on with the investigation. So with that in mind, we thank you for your attendance here, and we turn the floor over to you.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I won't go into the previous comments made. I do apologize. I'm on a very tight stop time. I made that known to the board that I have to be done by 11:30, have another event, so it's going to be very quick. You're correct. I can't speak about the outcomes of personal investigations. This investigation is complete. The 3% patch being referenced, as you said, Michael, has different meanings, actually, depending on how it's perceived. So there's an original intent, and then there is how the perceived intent may be. We have a policy within the Sheriff's Department that you cannot wear unauthorized patches, insignias, symbols, whatever that might be, and that became the policy issue that we addressed. And then we went into the underlying issues of why that deputy was wearing that patch. Was it for malicious intent? Was it affiliation with bad actor groups, extreme groups, whatever it might be? And that that investigation was completed. We found nothing in our investigation to show that the deputy was involved, engaged with these extremist groups. Everything led to us in our investigation that he wore that patch. Awkwardly enough, because we thought it was supporting the protesters, if you go back to what that might be. So he was addressed. There was discipline associated with that, and that was a site issue. I have briefed on this before several times with the media, in contrast to what one of the previous speakers said. It's been made public routinely about what we've done, what the outcome of that investigation was, and what we're doing going forward. And what we've done going forward is elicited the input of subject matter experts on extremism. And I'll be clear with you, Michael, I didn't even know what this group was, and maybe that's a good thing. When I found out about the patch, I came with that morning and said, okay, this is going to be not good. I do not know what the 3% of movement is. I don't associate with any extremist groups. I distance myself from some of these people that might be quasi-patriots but have an underlying motive, and so we steer clear of those folks. But what we did was we brought in subject matter experts working with our training division. You may have heard of some of them. Dr. Brian Levin, he's a subject matter expert in extremism at Cal State San Bernardino, and Dr. Peter Cini, who is also a subject matter expert in extremism at Chapman. We work with them to help, they help us define a curriculum that we have now put in place. We took that curriculum to the California State Police Officer Standards and Training, got it approved through the state, so the curriculum was approved to be trained through peace officers throughout the state. If they want to come to our training, but they can take our curriculum and train on it throughout the state. I hope that they do, because I hope nobody else goes through what I went through with the deputy, who made a very, very poor decision. We are in the context of our 2-year training model. That we have perishable skills training that takes place in a 24-month model. This has now been, this training has been inserted into that training program. So every deputy sheriff in the Orange County Sheriff's Department will receive the training on how these extremist groups work. First, on our policy, what our policy expectations are. So if people are indiscriminately determining what they can and cannot do. And then how these extremist groups work, how they oftentimes focus on military, public safety entities, indoctrinate them, and usually on a very innocuous, seemingly innocent thing about aligning people's patriot-type movements, and then there's this underlying indoctrination, if you will, with some very, very extreme views. And it goes through all of those iterations of how these groups work, with the ultimate goal of making sure our personnel know to be on the guard, first of all, so we were to reach out to them and try to bring them into one of these associations that might be seemingly innocent or aligned on values with public safety, but knowing that there are oftentimes underlying currents, if you will, that that have no intent. So that curriculum is ongoing, and we're getting great feedback. I think we're the first agency in the state to come up with such a curriculum. I know it's very necessary because of how these bad actor groups will oftentimes target law enforcement, military, and others to get them involved. And they try to align themselves with us. We're patriots, we're big supporters of law enforcement. We think like you, we got your back, and then they have this ulterior motive that I want nothing to do with. I don't want my staff to steer clear of. So I spoke very fast. I apologize. If there are any questions that you may have of me, I'll take them quickly, if you don't mind.
Okay. Any questions from the commissioners to our chair? Fareed? It looks like
yes, yes, sir. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Sheriff Vance. Thank you for taking time to address this issue to the commission and to the audience that is listening in. It's an important matter that law enforcement people working to safeguard us believe in the oath that they take when they get into this. The question that I have is, obviously you have put things in place and disciplinary issues and addressing it on a holistic basis in the training. On a different matter, which is coming up on the 11th, as a previous speaker also mentioned, the White Lives Matter thing that is happening at Huntington Beach. How do you see, I don't know if this falls into the jurisdiction of the sheriffs or the local police department, but how do you see this thing being addressed or safeguarded?
So thank you for the question, and I'll answer, and there's several different things I want to cover in that question. First is, yes, we do have a responsibility for civil unrest that takes place in the county by government code. I have an obligation to respond to and quell unrest. But that is the jurisdiction of the Huntington Beach Police Department. So we are an ancillary response. I have over 1,000 of my deputies trained on mobile field force, which is a crowd control technique. First and foremost, we always focus on the protection of First Amendment rights. If you go back after George Floyd, we responded to over 60 protests throughout Orange County that took place, some in sheriff's jurisdiction, some in municipal jurisdictions, are being patrolled by the Sheriff's Department, and very, very proud of our response. Very tempered, professional, guarding First Amendment rights, and that was where that patch incident happened. These great events that we had, all this response we had, were undone by the wearing of one deputy with that patch. All that great work wiped away by that one. I could not be more not only disappointed by that actions of that individual, but also frustrated that the good work of the department is tarnished by that one, the one patch. That said, we have a mobile field force contingent on standby. It's what we call virtual mobile field force. We have identified teams that will respond at the request of Huntington Beach. I get very leery when I go, and not that I have any issues with Huntington Beach and their response, but we go out with a very specific mission. Our mission is to maintain order, the maintenance of order, the protection of First Amendment rights, and addressing issues that might arise that may be criminal in nature. And that's up to the city who's submitted a family to determine when they want to take actions for criminal acts. In my jurisdiction, I'm black and white. I don't care if you're a patriot group on the right or an Antifa group on the left. The law is the law is the law. You can come out and we will protect your First Amendment right. And by the way, our deputies doing this for the sixth time. I want you to consider this from your group's perspective. We have deputy sheriffs standing protecting the First Amendment rights of people screaming at them about how much they hate them. That's what they did 60 times this year, and did it professionally and restrained and didn't get involved. But there's a big difference between the First Amendment's right to peaceably assemble, and that's what we'll always guarantee, but that does not include the right to peaceably assemble and throw rocks, bottles, tag cars, loot stores, attack people, whatever that might be. So I get that's a bright line rule. We will address the criminal violations that take place. But I get very concerned about how law enforcement is oftentimes interpreted based on these broad, disparate views. You can't stand on one side of the street with people who might have for whatever reason, against the other side. You got to be in the middle. And I get very concerned when there's this perceived affiliation with one group against the voice of another. We have to be very neutral, very tempered, make sure we maintain safety for everybody who's there. But the comments made about hate incidents and hate crimes, it's somewhat disconcerting when you can have somebody affect their perception of safety in a park in Fullerton because they make a comment that's not criminal. It still harms people. Those comments are still hurtful and harmful, but I have to deal with elements of crimes, and that's why it's always a bright line rule. On that topic also, we also have a very robust system in the sheriff's department, I know Irvine was mentioned, in handling hate incidents, hate crimes. I have a great relationship with Norma and her team, the Orange County Community Relations. We meet routinely on issues and talk about these things. So we have a role. Our role is very narrowly and specifically defined, and our team is highly trained on how to respond to these incidents and maintain neutrality. That's always going to be my focus. Thank you. By the way, that training that we did, we also trained every other municipal agency who was willing to come to our training when we put this on several times. Just had a training this past last week that was countywide for any agency who wanted to participate on mobile field force. It sounds scary, but it really is crowd control techniques for order of maintenance to make sure First Amendment rights are guaranteed and peace is maintained.
Sheriff, we're very grateful for your time today. I know you're running low on time. Do you have time for one more question? I thought I saw Rick raise his hand.
I have a light and a siren. I'll just roll that way when I have to go. I'm joking. I'm not going to do that.
It's not a question. I just wanted to thank you, Sheriff, having worked with you for the last 6 years in the Sheriff's Interfaith Council. I can just tell our group that I do every month when I report on our council that your leadership in the areas of anti-hate and anti-hate speech are really moving the needle forward. And, you know, while you're focusing on hate crime that you're talking about today, we're really your partners on hate incidents in a lot of ways because we have a responsibility to educate and to get the word out there that these kind of things are not acceptable. And you really are a force for good in this realm. And I just want to thank you, having worked so closely with you in front of our whole commission. So thank you so much, Sheriff.
Thank you very much. And if I could end with one comment. And these incidents that happen are, you know, they're not, nobody wants to wake up in the morning and have to deal with a patch or whatever else you deal with. My role is very simple. You elected me to do a job, and my job at times means holding people accountable. And I don't say this with any semblance of pride, and please don't take it this way, but I've walked more people through the door that don't have to be in law enforcement anymore than all my predecessors combined. And I have a high standard for this organization. If you can't meet them or are unwilling to, you don't get to work here anymore. It's pretty simple. And so the incidents that do happen, they do tarnish us. They splash on us. But take this to heart. That one deputy, with all the 60 responses we had, hundreds of deputies responding throughout the county, one deputy made that decision, and it was his decision, and we held him accountable for it. That does not in any way reflect upon the other 4,000 members of this organization. We have tremendous pride, and I'm very proud of the efforts that our deputies put forth every day to do their job. If they fall short, we're gonna hold them accountable. But they do a lot of really good work in the proud of the organization. I'm really proud of some of the movements we've made the last 2 years within our jails, programs there, outreach, the way we're dealing with their behavioral health issues that really aren't law enforcement's responsibility to deal with. That's other failures within the government system and social services. We're trying to build that system back up. I could go on and on and on until I could send the rest of your meeting, but I'm very proud, and I'm proud of the partnership and friendships that we've made throughout the years. Many of them, I'm looking at faces on the screen here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sheriff. We're very appreciative of all the great work that you've done, even going back before you were sheriff, with all the time you spent as under-sheriff. We're grateful for your time this morning as well.
Thank you. Well, my hair color's changed the last 2 years, and that's been updated in office, I think. But at least
I was going to say, at least you still got all your hair. That's better than I'm doing.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's move on to the next item.
Okay, item number 6 is impact of anti-Asian hate in OC communities.
Should I jump in?
Should I make an introduction, actually? Maybe I'll introduce Priscilla.
Okay,
so I'd like to introduce Priscilla Huang. She's actually, today, she's here on behalf of the advocacy group Asian Americans in Action. She actually was in attendance for the last supervisor meeting, in which she spoke twice. First, she spoke on behalf of really everybody, advocating for more funds to increase funds for the Human Relations Commission, because there is a need for in-language resources. And she also spoke on behalf of the collective, in support of the resolution in which she had a hand in writing. And so I'm really glad that she's here. But let me take a moment actually just to go over really briefly about her bio, Priscilla, if you don't mind, because I know you didn't include that in your PowerPoint. So Priscilla Huang is a senior attorney at National Health Law Programs in LA. And she focused on reproductive health, justice issues, and Medicaid and immigrant access to health care. And previous to that, she was a consultant and senior advisor for the White House Initiative on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders under the Obama administration, where she spearheaded various federal interagency efforts on improving language services and data collection and reporting. Before that, Priscilla held various roles at Asian Pacific Islander American Health Forums, including a senior director of impact strategies, where she served as the organization's primary policy strategist and oversaw Affordable Care Act implementation advocacy efforts. And one more,
Priscilla is also the Policy and Program Director at the National Asian American Women's Forum, where she led federal advocacy efforts on reproductive justice, immigrant rights, and anti-human trafficking. Priscilla was a Georgetown Women's Law and Public Policy Fellow at several board advisory committee and has been recognized for her leadership in the National Immigration Law Center, Families USA, the Congressional Black Caucus, Health Spring Trust, and others.
Priscilla, can you please proceed?
Welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you for the warm introduction, and thank you, Norma, as well, for inviting me to speak with all of you. I do have a PowerPoint presentation. Is that, I'm not sure how I should share it. Should I just share my screen?
Yeah, as a panelist, you can share your screen.
Okay. Let me...
Very glad somebody knew how to answer that question.
Okay, I'm going to need some guidance. Can someone remind me how you share screen? Yeah,
down at the bottom, there mm-hmm. should be a green icon.
Oh, I see it now. Yes, of course. It's the most obvious one.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Let's see. Are you seeing that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Let me go into my presentation. Okay. How does that look? Good? Okay. Great. So I wanted to, I'm here to talk a little bit about what's been happening in Orange County with the rise in anti-Asian violence and hate rhetoric, and to talk a little bit about our thought process behind, you know, consulting with Supervisor Bartlett's office, drafting the resolution, and then, of course, happy to hear more and answer any questions that you might have. But just a little bit about us. We are, we're actually an all-volunteer organization. We have a board of directors with 7 individuals and a 22-member advisory council, but we essentially formed in the late summer of 2019 because we saw a need for an advocacy group to really try to uplift the voices and stories of Asian Americans in Orange County and to advocate on issues impacting the communities here. And so our advocacy efforts actually started last April. We wrote a letter that we had over 100 signatories that was sent to the Board of Supervisors in April of 2020, asking them to condemn anti-Asian hate and violence. Because even at the start of the pandemic, there were already incidences happening here in Orange County. And because of the history of Asians and Asian immigrants in Orange County and beyond, we knew that the hate rhetoric that was coming out of the White House at the time was going to impact our communities directly. Since then, we've worked with a number of city councils to assist them in drafting and passing resolutions. We also have relationships with advocacy groups throughout the state, and we're in connection with national Asian American advocacy groups as well to coordinate efforts. And so more recently, we've been working very closely with a number of community leaders, including Jennifer Wang and others in Orange County, to again try to find system-wide solutions to address issue. So I'm going to just really quickly go over some data points. So we actually work closely with, we have a great relationship with Stop AAPI Hate. Stop AAPI Hate is a national project of the Asian Pacific Planning and Policy Council, Chinese for Affirmative Action, and the Asian American Studies Department of San Francisco. If you've seen in the news articles, they're often cite the statistics that Stop AAPI Hate has gathered, which is that there have been over close to 3,800 hate incidences across the United States against Asians. They did a Orange County poll of their national data for us, and so we know that from March of last year, March to the end of November of last year, there were 66 reported incidences to stop AAPI hate. They do have translated reporting forms. This is a self-reporting system as well. So I'm not quite sure how that compares to what OC Human Relations has received, but we know at least between that time period of 66 incidences here in Orange County. And you can see here, you know, most of those incidences are happening in public places or at places of business, on the public street or sidewalk, some at private residences, and then public parks are the next most common places where these incidences are occurring. The most frequently cited reason for these discriminatory acts are based on race and ethnicity. Face masks and language have also been cited. And then breaking down among the 66 self-reported incidences, you know, we have victims who are under the age of 10 who've reported to stop AAPI hate. And then we have people who are over 60 years old who've also reported here in Orange County.
Ms. Wong, can I ask a question?
Sure.
How does your organization differentiate an incident that is based on race versus ethnicity?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this data set is coming from a different, from our a collaborator organization, so I don't know how they are defining it. It is self-reported, but I think the way that I'll just share my own personal interpretation is, you know, not everybody who might have is of Asian descent necessarily identifies as Asian within the Asian American community. So, you know, people might identify more strongly as Chinese or, you know, Pakistani. So by U.S. census standards, those are ethnic groups and support. So it kind of depends on the individual is what I'm saying. It depends on how that individual is self-defining or self-reporting.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
No problem, hopefully that helps. And then here, as going back to the slide, can see that the over 70% of the people who are reporting these incidences are Asian American females, men, and then also trans and gender nonconforming. And then here, so the purpose of this slide is really just to show, you know, a lot of the language that has been coming out of these incidences really have been related to the coronavirus being labeled as Kung Flu and China virus and other affiliations like that. But, you know, when it comes to the impacts, you know, pretty much everybody has been impacted within the Asian American community. It doesn't matter to the perpetrator if they are Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, Japanese, or Thai. All of these community members have been impacted. So some of the impacts of anti-Asian hate here in Orange County, these are examples that I pulled directly from either both the written comments that were submitted to the Board of Supervisors at March 23rd, and then also the verbal comments that were shared. If you haven't had a chance, I would really highly suggest that you take a few minutes to listen to the video recording that has the testimony of the many Asian American leaders and joined by other BIPOC leaders, you know, sharing what has been happening here in Orange County at their organizations and to them at an individual level. But, you know, people talk about their fear of going out in public. I know my parents feel that way. School bullying that's happening both at parks and at schools all over Orange County that have been reported. Vandalism of people's homes and of Asian-owned businesses. folks have reported receiving threatening calls at Asian American surveying organizations. There was an assault at a COVID vaccination site run by an Asian American clinic, and then physical attacks that have occurred here in Orange County as well. And then this is my last slide. I want to end here to really lift up why we emphasize in the Board of Supervisors resolution, working with Supervisor Bartlett's office, why it was so important to get input directly from community members. You know, we really feel strongly that as members of the Asian American community, and really, you know, by all BIPOC communities who have been at different times and continually impacted by racism, discrimination, and white supremacy, you know, these impacted community members are the key to finding the solution to how to address this at a structural level. We need to be engaging with them in meaningful ways. We need to be listening. You know, that is where we're going to find ways to prevent future assaults and attacks and really be able to create a community that supports one another and is inclusive of everyone. You know, the community members, they, you know, particularly if they're immigrant or refugee, they don't always think about going to law enforcement, and sometimes they're actually fearful of going to law enforcement because of immigration-related fears, or, you know, they just have a distrust for government based on their own experience in their home countries. And so instead, they go to trusted sources, and those trusted sources are nonprofit organizations, places of worship, really community-based entities who really understand and work directly with community members, and they go to them for assistance. And these community-based organizations, CBOs, they often provide victim assistance services. And this is on top of everything else that is happening with COVID and all of the other things. So, you know, one of the organizations that testified, Ocapica, mentioned that their mental health assistance hotline has tripled in calls since the start of COVID because people are so fearful and they're seeking out services and they need in language support. So these organizations are scrambling to do rapid response to help support these individuals and families and trying to help with them navigate U.S. systems. And that, again, that's in addition to everything else happening with COVID and other things happening. So the last point I'll make here is, you know, we do, you know, the focus right now is on the escalating anti-Asian hate violence, but we know that, you know, from a structural and systemic level, the solution to addressing that is the same thing for all BIPOC communities that have experienced discrimination. So it is really important to engage with all of the communities that have experienced systemic racism, and it's the best opportunity to really work together to do that.
Okay, any questions for Priscilla?
Beautiful presentation. Thank you, Priscilla, for doing this. You have a very deep knowledge of the issues. All of you, to me, it's unbelievable. So thank you, Jennifer, Commissioner Jennifer, bringing you on board to present. Yeah, and you may probably see in the later commission agenda item that we are working with the supervisor, Lisa Barlett, as well, trying to put some thoughts together and outreach and come up with some programming. I'm sure there's going to be collaboration with you and your organization. On the data collecting and data tracking that you're doing, is it something that is proprietary that you have built, or are you using something from the outside?
Yeah, the data sources are from Stop AAPI Hate, and I can drop their website link into the chat. So it is not ours. It is, you know, they have been very generous in sharing updated data sources with us. This is the second data poll that they have provided. They gave us permission to use the data. I'm happy to pass it along to the commissioners if that's what you're interested in. But it's also a worthwhile project that actually the California State Legislature recently did approve additional funding for this specific project, Stop AAK Hate. And it was an additional $1.4 million to fund this project.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Priscilla, thank you so much for being here, and also thanks to Jennifer for arranging your ability to present here at our meeting. It's much appreciated, and you're welcome to stay for the whole meeting if you'd like. You're not obligated to, but you're certainly welcome to.
Thank you. Thanks for that opportunity.
Chair, if I could just say also, I'm just really appreciative of Jennifer's leadership on this commission and what she's providing for our county at a time when it's really needed. When none of us are commissioners for any particular community, which is for the whole community, but the particulars matter. And I just want to thank Jennifer and Priscilla as well for really leading this charge in what is such a needed moment for thoughtful leadership. So, thank you.
Agreed. Thank you. Okay, why don't we move on to the next item?
Okay, item number 7 is Board Resolution Ad Hoc Update.
Well, that couldn't be a better segue. As you know, we have an ad hoc committee now to deal with the board resolution regarding AAPI 8. The members of that ad hoc are myself and Joanne and Amy and Fareed and Jennifer. The work has just begun on this, but it is amazing to me how fast the pace is and how committed the members are of this ad hoc committee to bringing forth practical solutions that the Board of Supervisors has quite commendably asked us to do. I'm almost like a bystander on this because, frankly, the hard work and the greatest degree of thoughtfulness is really coming from the other members of this ad hoc, and I'm so thankful for your service and your willingness to join in this important matter. So with that in mind, in terms of brief updates, we had a meeting with Supervisor Bartlett 2 days ago, and we're having another ad hoc meeting on Friday, that's tomorrow, and we will report back as additional progress is made. It's really, in my view, it's very commendable and just a tremendous amount of energy in this ad hoc committee. I thank you, Joanne, Jennifer, Amy, and Fareed, for the tremendous level of effort and creativity put into this. Any questions? Okay, great. Now let's move on to the next item.
Item number 8 is Listening Session Ad Hoc Update.
Thank you very much again. I do not know where to begin because there's so much going on, and I do not know if this is still an item that we I missed the meeting myself, and Norma probably has a little bit more. There was so much coming at us with this White Lives Matter thing that came out and the statement, and whether to go with it or shoot it or whatever that may be. So that said, with this new initiative that we are going to be working, it's all kind of tied in, I guess, interwoven on the listening session. We were hoping to put one together to address all this thing that has unfolded after the incidences against the Asians and other people of color. But wanting to set something up which is more to the core of the listening session on these matters. Where does it stem from? How do we deal with it? How do we engage? I think earlier there was a comment made on having hard conversations. I think it was one of our guests, our listeners in the audience, that mentioned that. And sometimes we shy away from those things. So we have not kind of reconvened as that particular committee. We did have one, and Norma, if I may request you to kind of add something to it if I have left out.
Thank you, Fareed. At the last ad hoc meeting, the ad hoc members decided that they wanted to explore the possibility of inviting OCC Human Relations Council to come and do the OC Civil Rights History presentation and conversation with attendees. Commissioner Buck or Amy Buck did suggest that before we did that, or before the commissioners organized this event, that it'd be a good idea to bring that truncated version of a presentation to the commission meeting, so commissioners are able to experience and see it before taking it out to the community. And I'm working with the council to see if they're able to train me on the content and see how I might be able to make it shorter. Last I heard, it's about 40 minutes long. That includes the debrief portion, and it's pre-recorded. So I'm trying to figure out if we're able to fit that in, or a version or a part of it into the next commission meeting. So then the ad hoc is able to kind of plan out the next listening session. That's the bulk of the conversation. I know we were supposed to go back and connect with three, and then everything else happened. But I'm not sure if any of the other ad hoc members want to add.
I'd like to say I think it's a great idea to have that, you know, that presentation in front of the whole commission before moving forward with it. And I forget who you said made that suggestion, but thank you for that suggestion. And I wholeheartedly endorse that.
This is Commissioner Reynolds. I would also like to endorse that. I think we need to take a look at it, and perhaps it needs to be tailored some. But we can decide that once we've seen it.
So why don't we plan to put that into next month's agenda, since we've got 30 days or so to think about it. Let's go ahead and get that. Let's get that on the agenda for next month. And let's hope that we don't have any crises that come up between now and then. So many sad and unpredictable things have happened in the last 12 months or more. Okay. Are we ready to move on to the next item?
I just want to, while I'm editing here, because I know in the item of the agenda, or the attachments, I think there is the flyer as well. I don't know if that is going to be addressed later, but I think it's quite important.
That's within my reports.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I'll leave that out. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Item number 9 is Commission staff reports, new hate crime prevention coordinator, and B, OC Together dialogues on race relations invite.
Thank you, Jamie. So I did want to provide an update that Joyce is still with us. She's doing a lot of background work in trying to get all the 2020 hate crime data reports together in the database before she hands it off to me. But In the meantime, I am in the search of a new heat care prevention coordinator. Tomorrow, I do have interviews happening. We have about five folks that we're interviewing. I'm really excited about them. I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, by the next meeting, I will be introducing the commission to the new hate crime prevention coordinator. So keep you posted. As Reed or Commissioner Maruki mentioned in the packet, on the last page, you'll find an invitation for an event that the Human Relations Council is hosting. They're celebrating the 30 years establishment of the nonprofit, and they have this logo going, 30 now and always, but they are launching a series that's called OC Together, Dialogues on Race Relations, and their first event is April 27th from 5 to 7. It's going to be a Zoom event. It's free, and it's really going to be an amazing, powerful, personable, honest conversation about the impact of race in communities and beyond in Orange County. What does that look like? The first topic is racial identity. So it seems like they're going to challenge us to look inward so we're able to look forward. So if any of you are interested, the link, the bit.ly link, is there to register. So I just want to make sure that I share that information with you. There will be three or four more of these coming up in the year. And as they come up, they've asked me to share the information with you, so you'll occasionally see a flyer with information. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Norma. Any questions for Norma? Let's move on to the next slide.
Item number 10 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
We did have an update from the Sheriff. So I think we can move on to the next item.
Okay, item number 11 is the OCSD Interfaith Council update.
You're right. Thanks. I think I reported on the last meeting. And our upcoming meeting is April 28th, in which we're going to be talking about crime and community collaboration. And I joked at the planning meeting that didn't mean that the community is going to collaborate on crime. I just want to make that clear. Thank you for laughing, Dr. Reynolds. It's how the community can respond to crime that's happening. Certainly welcome to attend informational meetings, and you get to see kind of the panoply of things that the Sheriff's Department is doing, and it's also just a great convening of the faith community of Orange County. It's probably the largest convening of the faith community of Orange County, I would think, in this day and age. So welcome to join us April 28th.
Thanks, Rick. Any questions for Rick? Okay, let's move on to the next item.
Next is announcements from commissioners.
I just want to acknowledge, I don't know how many of you caught that yesterday on the Channel 9 news. I watched it on 10 o'clock, but our own Norma was being interviewed, or she was covering the issues on Orange County Human Relations, representing it, and the recent resolution that was put out by the Board of Supervisors and us was in that area. So Norma, you did a great job. Thank you for representing the commission well and for addressing the issues.
I do want to clarify, it wasn't an interview. I was actually part of a panel for an online event at the Seal Beach Police Department put on yesterday, and it was really in response to the Leisure World Aid incident that happened. So they put a forum together for the community, and that was a panel on that at that event last night. So thank you, Reed.
And I would also like to say my husband heard it on the radio this morning on his way to work. So I don't know if it was, I said, well, was it Norma? He goes, I don't know. I missed the part when they introduced, but he did hear it on the radio as well. So it's getting some play.
Well, I would suggest that you
send it. I'm pretty sure it was Norma.
It was Norma for sure. And the scenery that she had was the same one that she saw yesterday.
Yeah, she had a beautiful. She had the tree.
So, Norma, go ahead and send the link. I think it's good for the commissioners to have it. I'm sure it's archived somewhere. But it'd be great if you could share that.
I would have voted for the llama. I just think that makes a great Okay, any other announcements?
I have a question. I understand that there was this big meeting at the Board of Supervisors on March 23rd for OC Human Relations. And maybe I missed the email, but were we informed about that? Because I would love to come to those things and support it, but I could have missed it too. So did we send something?
I did share that I had been invited by District 5 to present the Board of Supervision meeting. I guess I should have followed that up with an email.
No criticism about it. No worries. But then Jennifer's thing, I think, happened, the Priscilla's thing happened on that day. I just, like, if we're going before the Board of Supervisors, we can support. We'd like to do that.
Thank you. I don't remember the email traffic on that, to be honest. But sometimes those things come up so quickly that there isn't a whole lot of time to organize it. But yeah, certainly the more advance notice that the rest of the commissioners can get, it'd be nice to be able there to be there, for those who are able to support us. In any event. Any other questions or announcements?
Yes, Michael, this is Commissioner Reynolds, the other Reynolds. And I would just like to ask a question about the Goodwill Project. I understand that the committee has met again, and there's been some fine leadership exercise, and that there's some new ideas about moving forward with the project. Could some of the people on that committee, could they update us?
Abby, unfortunately, has to leave, but Amy is here, and maybe she can help us.
Yeah, okay, sounds like there was some really good work done.
Yeah, and Commissioner Matsuba is also here, so.
Oh, good.
So, I don't know if you want to chime in, but basically, I can start, and then Commissioner Matsuba, if you want to jump in. But we have made some recommendations for some people to acknowledge some applications that came in. We reviewed them and made some recommendations. And I think where we left off was I remember receiving an email message stating that the staff at the county was going to review the recommendations. I think the board wanted to show the form moving forward. But Commissioner Matsuba, do you have more to add?
Oh, that's about where we are. I agree. That's about where we are. I think that we were trying our best to get candidates that were related to COVID, but that was not, those were not the ones that were coming in. So we have some people that are selected, and they just have to be vetted through.
Hi, Commissioners. This is Renee Ramirez. Just wanted to let you know that we have not received anything for vetting. So if you could package those materials and make sure that they're sent over to us, we'd be happy to take a look.
Okay. Great. And thanks, Joanne and Amy, for jumping all over this. I know we're leaning heavily on the two of you for so many things, and yet you're working on this as well. So thank you so much.
Yes, I especially appreciate it. This is Commissioner Reynolds again. I especially appreciate it because this is kind of my baby, and our committee worked so hard on it before, and I'm glad it's not dying a slow death. You guys have really pushed some energy into it, and I so appreciate you keep it going.
Okay. Any other announcements? All righty. Well, now we've come to the end of another meeting. This has been a great one. We had some fantastic speakers and some wonderful progress report the commission and the commissioners are making, and some good comments from the public as well. So thank you all. I hope you have a wonderful month of April, and look forward to seeing you all in May. I don't know if we have an ETA as to when we'll actually be able to meet in person, but I'm certainly looking forward to that day when it comes.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.